Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report. It is the fourth day of December 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB. He's in Mandeville, Louisiana. And then a bit later in the program, Channel Seeds, Matt Bennett will join us from Windsor, Illinois, to take a look at the cash grain market. We'll discuss the weather forecast with T-Storm Weather's Mike Tenora, especially the drought potential in the Black Sea area and the impact it may have on the marketplace. And we'll also take up what happened in Washington, D.C. yesterday as the U.S. House of Representatives passed a tax extenders package, all during this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. The way the numbers finished up in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures in the corn pit were up 7.25 cents at $3.76 in the December, the March at $3.89 and 3 quarters, 7 3 quarters higher in the May at $3.98 and 1 quarter, up 7 3 quarters. July corn at $4.04 and 3 quarters, up 7 1/4, and December of next year 6 cents higher at $4.17 and 3 quarters. From the soy complex, bean futures now, January contract $10.10 and a half cents, up 12 1/4. The March at $10.17 and a quarter, 12 cents higher. May futures up 11 1/2 at $10.23 and 3 quarters. July soybeans at $10.28 and 3 quarters, up 11 1/2. And next year's November at $9.91, 9 1/4 higher. Bean meal futures for the day at $3.85.70, up $4.60. And the bean oil at $31.60, down 26 cents. Chicago soft red winter wheat at $5.99 and 3 quarters, up 2 3/4 in the lead option December. July at $5.98 and 3 quarters, down 1/4 cent. The hard red Kansas City July, or the harvest month there, at $6.39 and 3 quarters, down 2 3/4 cents. February live cattle at $167 and a nickel, finished 7 1/2 cents lower. April there at $166.47 and a half, were down 37 1/2. Feeder cattle for the day in the March at $232.27 and a half, were up 37 1/2. The nearby January, by the way, at $236.35, up $1.52 and a half. And lean hogs on the afternoon finished the December contract at $87.90, down 15 cents.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Checking now the outside markets, and we'll begin with the crude oil for the day. It traded the nearby contract to $66.71, at least at this hour. That's down 67 cents for the day. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.11 and a half, that's a penny and seven tenths lower on the afternoon. And the gasoline and the RBOB down a penny and 2 tenths at $1.79 and a half. Natural gas for the day at $3.65 and 6 tenths, 14 9/10 cents lower. In ethanol futures, and the January contract, a penny and 6 cents higher at $1.77 and 1/10 cents. The outside markets show us the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 17,884, just about 13 points lower. The gold around $1,207 is $1.25 lower, and the dollar now trading down 0.263 at 88.73. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area today. A chance of drizzle after 4, mostly cloudy otherwise. A high of 34 on an east wind at 7 miles an hour today. Tonight, a chance of rain before 3 a.m., then a slight chance of freezing rain between 3 and 5 a.m., a slight chance of rain after 5 a.m., cloudy with a low of 32 going into tomorrow. Rain early on Friday, high of 41 degrees on a southeast wind at 3 to 5 miles an hour. And then Friday night, rain mainly before 1 a.m., a low of 33 degrees, north winds at 6 to 11, and Saturday, a 50% chance of rainfall, with a high on Saturday of 41 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
It is the fourth day of December, Thursday afternoon. We're turning our attention now to the commodity markets directly with Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana, coming to us from the compound today in Waco, Texas. Hi, Dan. How are things there in Texas?
Doing fine. We're warmer.
That's good. So tell me about the marketplace, because I know you've been watching the up and downs in the marketplace and the outside markets, the influence, that is, of crude oil, and then what's been happening in Washington, D.C., the passage of the tax extenders package out of the House, which put another dollar back into the biodiesel side of the marketplace, potentially. What does it all mean to you?
Well, we got to get Obama to sign it, yes. We'll have to see how that plays out. But I think, you know, what we saw here, at least in the ag commodities here today, is we did have a good set of weekly export sales numbers for both corn, soybeans, and the soybean meal. So that was enough to kind of get this market at least put the brakes on the corrective decline that took place the day after Thanksgiving, and then it kind of spilled on into the early part of the week. And now we've had a real strong bounce out of that corrective decline low. The markets all held key support retracement, Fibonacci retracement levels, and if we could get some nice follow-through here tomorrow, I think it lays the groundwork then for the market to maybe strengthen as we go through September. I'm kind of looking at, you know, roughly a 10-week low in corn, an 8-to-9-week cycle low here in soybeans. So if these are the lows that we put in this week, then this market does have some potential here, maybe to surprise everybody with the period of December price strength.
Does this all jibe with what you've been seeing in your longer-term analytical cycles?
I think so. I mean, it continues to validate them that the longer-term cycles have turned up. And as, you know, we talked there at the asset concert, technical analysis is looking at price structure, and the price structure, is you assume everybody's secrets are in the price structure, and the price structure then would imply that the fundamental news coming at us will become more friendly over time than what we know at that particular date and time. And I think today's export sales numbers kind of made a step in that direction. The other thing is that every dog watching the charts have been kind of looking at a head and shoulder top formation. And been kind of talking about that. It's funny how the fundamentalists will look at a chart when they see a bearish picture in it, but otherwise they ignore a chart. And I think today was a good sign that the head and shoulder top formation is going to go down as a bear trap. And is going to trap the bear, and he's going to have to buy his way out of it as we go on through the month of December.
And would this be for both corn and soybeans, because that formation is both in both December and the lead option soybeans?
Well, corn it never really did what we would call get into the confirmation stages. I mean, there was that head and shoulders, but it never did break underneath the neckline, so you really never had one in place. You had a potential one, and people were playing for it to be a head and shoulders top. Now, soybeans, we did bust underneath the neckline, but it failed the 62% retracement level of the October, early November dance, which is a key retracement level for soybeans. Soybeans have a tendency to hold either a 38% and or a 62%, we did find support at a 62% and was able to bounce off of it yesterday, and then today we were able to extend those advances. So everybody that got short based upon the head and shoulders top or the penetration of the neckline now are probably going to have to send some money to Chicago or get out of their position.
Dan, anything else that we need to take up before I let you go for the day? Enjoy your time, by the way, in Texas.
No, other than I think what one needs to probably be watching, this market has had a tendency to rally into option expiration since the overall cast of the market has been very negative. You've had a lot of people short those call options, and the market has had a tendency to go in there and make those guys that are short calls buy their way out with a loss. So that'll be the next thing to be watching as we go in toward the December 20th timeframe.
We'll talk to you again next week. Thanks, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker, of course, is with CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. In fact, it won't be a week before we talk to him because we'll have him on our Commodity Week program. We'll record that this afternoon. Dan is our guest, along with John Bondurant, one that everybody wants to hear. He's scheduled to be with us. Merrill Crowley will be on that one. Dan Zwicker, John Bondurant. So if you're interested, it should be up on our website at willag.org this evening. And then, of course, we'll air on our radio stations tomorrow afternoon on the home station at WILL AM 580 and Saturday morning on many of these radio stations. That's Commodity Week. It's our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's turn our attention now to agricultural news, where there's really just one big story. It comes from Washington, D.C. Late yesterday, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a tax extenders bill that will need to go to the Senate and then on to the president's desk before the end of the year. It will make for the 2014 year only good the $1 per gallon biodiesel tax credit, the Section 179 and bonus depreciation on farm assets tax credits as well. Farm groups had lobbied all year long for a permanent tax code, or at least a two-year extension of key tax breaks that expired last December, including that $500,000 in the same year expensing of farm equipment, biofuels, and other breaks. Now, partisan differences over the tax breaks for the working poor and the president's executive action on illegal immigrants has scuttled the deal, and agriculture is likely to get just a one-year break for a year that's almost over, says incoming Senate Finance Chair Orrin Hatch.
We were on the cusp of a deal last week. Then something strange happened. On Tuesday, the White House caught wind of the potential deal, even though the terms had not yet been finalized, and issued a veto threat. How often does that happen, Madam President? How often does the President issue a veto threat on potential deals still under negotiation?
A threat Hatch charges was backed by more liberal Senate Democrats, even as Majority Leader Harry Reid helped craft the compromise.
As a result, it appears unlikely that any deal on the tax extenders package will be reached during this Congress. Instead, the most likely scenario appears to be that Congress will pass a one-year retroactive extension of tax provisions that have already expired.
This means if you're a producer who still wants to buy a tractor or combine this year and take the Section 179 tax break, you may have just a few weeks left to do it, short of not passing anything at all. Hatch calls the pending bill probably the worst of all possible worlds.
Rather than the certainty that would come with making some of the more prominent individual and business tax extenders permanent, families, individuals, and businesses will have to once again put long-term plans on hold in hopes that the Congress can get its act together the next time around.
And while the administration has now signaled it's open to a short-term bill, Senate Democratic leader Harry Reid says he'll make a decision after House passage late Wednesday of a bill that once again prolongs the debate over long-term tax reform.
Support for today's broadcast comes in part from the Friends of WILL and from Common Ground Food Co-op in downtown Urbana, with a deli featuring iced lattes made with fairly traded ingredients and local milk, and a salad bar filled with local and organic ingredients. More information is at commonground.coop.
Coming up next, Lisa Braltz reviews a new book that explores artisanal food production in her latest edition of Backyard Industry.
Since it began in 2010, Backyard Industry has been primarily about the power found in the small, of the personal, in our relationship to our food and the earth. With each tiny foray into something new related to growing food, cooking food, building structures for food, making art out of or with food, we derive great power from that small effort. There's empowerment going both ways, in fact, in bringing homemade jam to a neighbor, with offering to help start seeds, with being available to feed the chickens in an emergency. Those small gestures can make a huge difference to both parties. When we go to a farmer's market, we move from small gestures to small enterprise. The farmers that come to farmer's markets are generally not farmers growing specialty crops on a large scale. They're not trying to feed the world. They're just trying to feed and still form relationships with the people in their food shed. The farmers, the cheesemakers, the bakers, the jam makers, for the most part, and I do stress most, they're there to sell what they've made or grown directly to the consumer on that day and then head home. Their small has not yet gone big. It probably never will go big. Suzanne Cope is the author of the new book, Small Batch: Pickles, Cheese, Chocolate, Spirits, and the Return of Artisanal Food. She's a writer and teacher born and raised in the Northeast U.S. who became fascinated with the idea of the small batch production of chocolate, cheese, pickles, and spirits. Few other products, says Cope, have retained their popularity, yet also have had their traditional character diluted so much as these four. Her book, a rather academic romp through the history and current day examples of small batch preservation, preparation, and distribution of the foods in the book's title, addresses much. One topic, the current watering down of words for marketing purposes. Artisanal and craft, much like the word local, have come to have different meanings depending on who's selling and to whom they're selling. Another topic, what happens when the small batch producer encounters demand great enough to require moving out of basic facilities? How do you keep the vibe of small without compromising quality? What if a producer wants to get a bit bigger but can't acquire the funds to expand? And how big can a producer get before they're no longer small anyway? She visits producers located primarily on the East and West Coast to get an idea. What she finds, both in terms of operation and business practices, ranges from the tiny and mission-centered to the less tiny and surprisingly competitive. Cope, in an interview, agreed that some of the small batch producers in her book definitely qualified as rock stars in the artisanal food world. When she talked to Mass Brothers Chocolate New York, for example, she didn't actually talk to the brothers. She spoke to one of their people, one of their really invested people, but still. Are they still small batch in the cultural sense with their handlers and cookbooks and food magazine profiles? Not really. But has your neighbor ever heard of them? It's doubtful. And are the Mass Brothers okay with that? Probably. Cope's book is extremely strong on its food history and biographies of the producers she interviews, especially the picklers and cheesemakers. Her descriptions of the dairy farms and producer commitment are fantastic. The relative, though not complete, absence of Midwestern producers was a bit disappointing, though, given the region's burgeoning food scenes, growing number of farmers markets, and recent enactment of cottage food laws enabling home producers to sell their products to consumers legally at those farmers markets. Cope also investigates what she calls counter cuisine in the United States, hippies to hipsters. But I wish she'd given more time to the Midwest's strong farm and consumer cooperative tradition. Overall, though, the book is an excellent deep dive into the power of the small and not so small batch to reconnect people with their food and with each other. The full interview with Suzanne Cope is available online. Visit will.illinois.edu/backyardindustry, look for Small World, click Listen, and choose the interview audio option. For Backyard Industry, this is Lisa Braltz.
Our thanks to Lisa Braltz and to Dave Dickey for their production of Backyard Industry. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. We'll be right back. this Thursday afternoon. Let's talk about the commodity markets and the cash grain in specific. On the phone line with us from Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, is Matt Bennett. Matt, thanks for taking the time with us. You're traveling today, a bit like Dan Zwicker was. Where are you at the moment?
Well, I'm back in Illinois finally, but I was in Amarillo yesterday evening at the ranch and farm show down there. It's I think it's the second biggest indoor show in the country, I guess, behind Louisville. But very interesting place to be, you know, with Hereford Market being right there close. And, you know, about everybody in the crowd pretty much had cattle. So it's a little bit different than talking markets at home.
Hey, did you go to Hereford? Did you get a look at it up close?
I didn't on this trip. I've definitely been there. And, you know, obviously, I think there's pretty much the cattle of the world. There's cattle everywhere.
It's a strange one, but that one happens to be on my bucket list. I kind of hope that we can make that one a follow the corn trip. I haven't been able to talk them into letting me bring people directly there just yet, but I'll find somebody to let us in and we'll go at some point. tell me about the marketplace for cash grain. We've had kinds of... We've had some ups and downs, but today was an up day and technically looking relatively good at this point.
Yeah, you know, I think with the corn market, really in the bean market both, I mean, posting big export numbers this morning definitely helped kind of catapult the markets. I mean, we're kind of in a state of limbo, really, with the corn market. You know, it's been tough to tell whether the trend was up or trend was down, but soybean market, it definitely lost the shine off of it here recently, and so being able to post the kind of gains we had today definitely bodes well for the bean market. But, you know, demand is certainly not going anywhere, and it's a very good development for both markets. And, you know, moving forward, I think it's something that a person definitely wants to see with these type of crop sizes that we have.
Has it begun to change the way you think about marketing next year's crop yet?
Well, not necessarily. I still think a person needs to be very cautious with the bean market, you know, and really with the corn market, I don't see any problem with locking some in. You know, we had the huge rally in the fall that none of us were really expecting, and I've said it several times, it's tough to really talk about a rally if you're not going to use any of it. So I'm still definitely more of a seller of beans for 15 than I am for corn, but I think that you know, with the corn market, there's probably a lot of better days ahead. But if we sell some and we do get a little bit of a pullback here through the winter doldrums, you know, I'm definitely going to be stepping back in and buying some calls to cover those sales.
And what do you think about this year?
Well, as far as the cash corn market goes, I think right in here, you know, since we got the rally, we've been pretty heavily recommending guys to go ahead and sell. Most of our guys don't have any ownership of beans left. So if a person did have beans left, I would definitely be wanting to move them, in my opinion. And then, you know, as far as corn goes, it's six, one half dozen the other, but I think I'm probably more of a seller, looking to maybe re-own later on.
Thanks, Matt, for taking the time with us.
Yep, thanks, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
It's National Cookie Day. It's also St. Barbara Day, patron of brewers, hatters, sailors, and storms. On this day in agricultural history in 1812, the power mower was patented, the horse-drawn mower was granted before patents were numbered, and was lost in the Great Patent Office fire of 1836. In 1816, Benjamin Stillman was born, an American chemist. It was his reporting on the potential uses of crude oil products that gave impetus to plans for drilling the first U.S. producing oil well. In 1864, John Fowler died, an English engineer. He invented the steam-hauled plow and several other special-use plows. During a business trip to Ireland, he witnessed the famine, which followed the failure of 2 years of potato crops. He returned to England determined to use steam power to drain land. The result was his mull drainage plow, shown at the Great Exhibition of 1851. In 1867, National Grange was founded. It was the first organized agricultural movement in the U.S. and tasked with uniting private citizens in improving the economic and social position of the nation's farm population. And in 1970, Cesar Chavez was jailed in California for refusing to cancel a United Farm Workers lettuce boycott. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. For a Thursday afternoon, Mike Tenora joins us from T-Storm Weather in Chicago to take a look at the growing region's weather across the nation and the planet. Let's start with the El Nino report. It was released today. Tell me about it, please, Mike.
It's pretty similar to what we've seen over the last several months, with around a 65% chance for El Nino conditions to develop over the next few months. Whether or not that occurs is not really all that important to us, because we know that if an El Nino does develop over the next several months, it would be a weak El Nino. And weak El Ninos don't correlate to weather in different areas of the world all that well. We're seeing that right now. For example, we're turning much warmer across the U.S., which does fit with that El Nino story. We're oftentimes warmer than normal when we have an El Nino event. But think back 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, it was unseasonably cold. That typically would not have occurred in an El Nino situation. Again, this just fits with the idea that the El Nino is weak. When it's weak, the weather doesn't always match the way you think it would. So you might see flashes of weather that match what you think is going to happen, but then it might only last for a short time, as opposed to, say, several months.
And then turn your attention to South America and talk about conditions there and what kind of impact El Nino may or may not have. It looks like weather conditions are actually pretty good.
They have been very good. They've been seeing nice mixes of rain and dry periods over the last 4 to 8 weeks. You could argue that parts of Brazil are too wet, including in key corn and soybean areas. And don't forget that planting was very late in Brazil, not because of wetness, but actually because the rainy season didn't start on time across interior Brazil. That was back in September and October. Now things are back to normal there with lots of rains occurring. Again, a little bit too much of a good thing in a few areas, but generally Brazil's looking okay. Paraguay's looking okay. We do have some heavy rain situations that have occurred back in October and over the last 5 days in Argentina. That's probably been inducing some wheat quality problems as harvest gets underway across Argentina. But for corn and soybeans, again, we're seeing a nice mix of dry periods and wet periods for newly planted crops and for crops that still need to be planted.
Moving from the southern hemisphere to the northern hemisphere, there have been some rumblings from the Black Sea area about growing conditions for their winter wheat crop. Are you concerned?
I'm very concerned about Russia right now, because if you look at rainfall there over the last 120 days, we're talking about a four-month period dating back to the beginning of August, which is before their wheat planting season began. Remember, wheat has actually now been planted over the last 4 months, and the winter is beginning there. Almost all of their wheat belt has been drier than average over the last 4 months, and the reason we're concerned about it is because a lot of this area has received less than half of its average rainfall, with a few locations receiving less than a third of its average rainfall over that time period. No matter how you look at that, that is a drought-type scenario and is developing now. And the only way we're going to get out of this situation is to see big rains and snows start to show up. The sooner we get them, the better. But again, this is a long-term situation. It's not going to break tomorrow. We'll be dealing with this more than likely into the spring.
Thanks, Mike. Mike Tenora with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois on this Thursday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.